All right, well, you kidding me? Giant show today, giant day today. Trump's immigration speech, full of vitriol and hatred. Can't wait to share it with you. That's coming up later in this hour. Later in this day, the aggressive progressives, Wazik Dirlan, they're dropping the elbow at 9 p.m. Eastern live. First segment's free for everybody. Don't miss it. That's on tytnetwork.com/live. Everybody go tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell Randy Gonzalez, the aggressive progressives are coming. Jimmy Dore, Steve-O, they are going to do to cover the election and to cover the topics from a progressive perspective. And I was on the first show, but I think it was fantastic. I hope you guys enjoyed it. All the members get the whole shows, every show that the aggressive progressives do. That's tytnetwork.com/join. I have a fun, dramatic announcement at the top of the second hour. And then Mark Ruffalo, one of the biggest liberals in Hollywood, some are saying he's not liberal enough. He might have made a transgression, if you will, that I will explain in the second hour. I probably shouldn't have said that. Okay, anyways, you'll see what I'm talking about then. Huge show ahead. Like I said, Trump's immigration speech and the reaction and the racist reaction is all wonderful. We're going to get to all that a little bit later. But first, let me start with these stories. Go. So we had a couple of people who acted great. You know, a lot of people are saying heroically. Maybe, I hope, but God bless. Okay, so it's not the point of the story, but let me tell you for God's sake what they did. It's Steve Eckel and Sarah Mazzone, and they're in New Jersey, and they see a kid in a car. Temperatures in the high 80s, it's late summer, and they look around, and there's nobody there, and they can't figure out who the parent is. They're not around. They call 911. Correct thing to do. Don't take any action on your own yet. Let's not panic. And then the cops are taking a little while to get there. And then Steve remembers, oh, I got a sledgehammer in my car. So he gets a sledgehammer, smashes one of the windows, and they take the 4-month-old out and save him. Now everybody's saying, oh, and he's a retired police officer. This is all wonderful. They're saying it's heroic. I mean, he didn't risk his life or anything like that, but great. I applaud him 1,000%. Okay. So in fact, so does HLN. So Headline News has him on to discuss his heroics, if you will. So let's go to that.
You're walking through the parking lot. You see the baby. Help us understand what went through your mind and why you did what you did.
As I was walking up, I was parked far back.
Wait a minute. Everybody watching that goes, there's something off there. What in the world? They blurred his shirt. Why did they blur his shirt? What a strange thing. Did he have a curse on there? Did he have a logo that, like, was it Coke and CNN advertises Pepsi? Why in the world did they blur his shirt? So we that, it turns out, happened in the second airing, which happened an hour after they did it live. So we found the tape of when Steve Eckel was on live. Let's watch and find out what his shirt actually said.
You're walking through the parking lot. You see the baby. Help us understand what went through your mind and why you did what you did.
As I was walking up, I was parked far back.
Ah, he had a Trump shirt on. Okay. Now, is that the right thing for HLN to do? No. Don't blur that shirt. What? The guy's running for president. I don't know if you know this. At least 45% of the country supports him. God help us all. But they do. If you had a Hillary Clinton shirt on, they shouldn't blur that. Bernie Sanders shirt, they shouldn't blur that. No reason to blur a Donald Trump shirt. That's really, it really is quite crazy. Look, I think you know what I think of Donald Trump. Can't stand the guy. I've got 1,000 different issues with him. But it's America. You get to wear whatever shirt you want. And apparently the HLN spokespeople realized that was a mistake and said, we blurred the logo and shouldn't have. It was done in error. It's kind of a weird way of putting it. Yeah, it was a mistake. You say, I'm sorry, and you move forward. I mean, you have Trump's, HLN is the sister station of CNN. You have Trump's former campaign manager, Lewandowski, who's still under contract for Trump, and you're paying him a ton of money to be a pundit on CNN. It's not like you don't represent the Trump position. You've got the Trump position. Let the man wear his shirt. At a minimum, he earned that right, but you know what? We all have that right anyway as Americans. So, okay. This one is easily adjudicated. Okay, they are guilty, but it's okay. They've now fixed it.
But why do you think they did it, though?
Good question, JR. I think that I don't think it was like we used to blur Trump's face. I think that someone panicked and was like, oh, is that too partisan? You see what I'm saying? And so like, oh, and they might have done the same thing if it was a Hillary Clinton shirt. But we'll never know. Maybe they wouldn't have. I don't know.
I think they're trying to do him a favor. I mentioned this earlier.
Really? No. Yeah,
it was a
feel-good
story. It's like, look at the hero cop. Let's make him look good. Because actually one of the things they did say, I only took that little piece, but she said, you don't even want to be called a hero, but we're going to call you a hero. You know, he was being very modest, right? Because he smashed out a window, which is what, honestly, a lot of people could do. So he was downplaying it, which is fine. Great.
Mm-hmm.
But they want him to look good. They want a nice, happy story. And they're like, oh, people are going to hate him just because of his shirt. And a majority of people talk about how much they dislike Trump. So they're doing him a favor. They're like,
I thought you meant they're doing Trump a favor.
Oh, no, no.
No, no, they're doing Steve Echol a favor. Hey, listen, you look good here for saving the baby. Don't ruin it by wearing a Trump shirt. Maybe.
I don't know.
They were trying to help a brother out. But even so, he doesn't want that help. He's a Trump supporter and he's proud.
He did it on purpose. He wanted to show
it. Yeah, of course, of course. Don't do that. That's silly. Okay. All right. We move forward. Okay, now we go to Steve Bannon. Okay. Steve Bannon is the so-called CEO of Trump's campaign. No one knows what that means. That's a title they made up. That didn't really exist that much in politics before. Anyway, we've got tape of him talking about why liberals don't like strong conservative women like Sarah Palin. And he talked about this a couple of years back now. And he had an interesting theory on it. And I wanted to share it with you. It's in a 2011 radio interview. And then I want to talk to you about what it indicates for the conservative mind and for the Trump campaign. Let's watch.
The progressive narrative, Saturday morning was the progressive narrative, and that is all about victimhood. They're either a victim of race, they're a victim of their sexual preference, they're a victim of gender. It's all about victimhood, right? And the United States is the great oppressor, not the great liberator. And so these women cut to the heart of the progressive narrative. You know, that's why there's the unintended consequences of the women's liberation movement. That, in fact, the women that would leave this country would be feminine, they would be pro-family, they would have husbands, they would love their children. You know, they wouldn't be a bunch of dykes that came from the seven sisters schools up in New England.
A bunch of dykes from the seven sisters schools. No, he said that. Okay. So the seven sisters schools are a bunch of liberal arts schools from the Northeast, like Bryn Mawr, Radcliffe, etc. And so now this is not during the campaign. Like I said, it was a couple years back, right? I care about it more in terms of who this guy is, why Trump selected him, and even more importantly, the mindset of the conservative. So Trump didn't select him because Steve Bannon has made outrageous and offensive comments before. He didn't select him despite that. He selected him because of that. So he's proud of his defense of the alt-right and etc. It's not like we didn't know who Steve Bannon was. We long history here with Steve Bannon. Yes, we found out some new things. His wife accused him of anti-Semitism during their divorce, saying that he wouldn't want to send his girls to a Jewish school because he didn't want them hanging out with Jews. Right? And apparently domestic assault charges, etc. Okay, that maybe they didn't know because they're incompetent and they didn't bother checking. But generally, they knew what Steve Bannon was about. They knew he's the kind of guy who to say dykes in the middle of an interview. On the radio. But to me, the more interesting part is the concept that he lays out in the beginning. The liberals, they're all about victimhood, you know, like anyone is discriminating against blacks or gays or anything like that. And by the way, look at these freaking dykes. No, but you see, you just proved that people do discriminate against them, including you. You're going around throwing slurs around. And then you turn around and go, so what are they worried about, man? What's the big deal? There's no discrimination left. The very next paragraph, you prove that discrimination. Now, in reality, why does he talk about victimhood? Why, Rush Limbaugh is obsessed with this. Bill O'Reilly on Fox News is obsessed with this. Oh, the liberals love to play the victim. As always, it is a psychological case of projection. They actually love being the victim. That's why Bill O'Reilly invents things like the war on Christmas. Because how else is he going to be a victim? He wants to be a victim so bad that but he's a powerful, wealthy, white man. He's in pretty good shape in America, right? Up until Barack Obama, every single president was a white man, you know, and the list goes on and on, right? So what does he have to do? He has to invent things like, oh, they do. Starbucks wouldn't say Christmas to me. They said Happy Holidays. Oh, I'm such a victim. They said Happy Holidays to me. Oh, you pathetic losers. You're looking for that victimhood in every way, and then you pretend that the liberals are, oh, these guys, they got unarmed black men getting shot. Well, what do you guys think, you're victims? Yeah, that's an actual victim. The guy got shot when he didn't deserve to get shot. The guy in South Carolina got shot in the back. He didn't have a weapon. The guy in Chicago, Laquan McDonald, walking away, gets shot in the back. Yeah, that's a victim. Not somebody said Happy Holidays to me when I thought they should have told me Merry Christmas, so because who cares about the Jews and the Muslims and the Buddhists and the atheists and all those guys? No, you must say my holiday, right? Otherwise, you're victimizing me. Now, you guys, that's the whole conservative mentality. That's why when you say, hey, can we look into the training of the police officers, make sure they're not shooting too quickly? How dare you, war on cops! War on cops! Red alert, we are the victims. We're the victims. If you take away this much of our power that we held over you, then we're going to cry bloody murder and cry about it all day long. But if you actually cry about literal bloody murder, how dare you? Look at you trying to be victims. That's the conservative mindset. Okay, we're moving forward. Now I'm going to Kaepernick. Okay. Buckle up. Colin Kaepernick is a guy I had on my fantasy football team a couple of years ago. I drafted him early, thought he was going to be great. He screwed me. And I've never forgiven him until now. So, I tell you that because previously to this story, I had no love for Colin Kaepernick. And I have no interest in defending him for whatever other reasons you might imagine. And the other day, he sat down for the national anthem and instead of standing up, and he released a statement as to why. Now, me, I don't love that kind of protest. I'm a little too jingoistic and rah-rah, American flag, don't burn it, national anthem. You know, I love America. I love the ideas and the ideals of America, and I think we should rise up to those ideals. And I don't think the right wing owns America. I think that's our America. Okay. So for all those reasons, I wouldn't have done it the way he did. But number one, he had a perfectly good reason. Number two, what he did in a form of protest is actually the most American thing you can do, and part of the reason I love America. And number three, now the backlash against him is so severe and so stupid that I'm going to say, okay, that's it. You turned me into a Colin Kaepernick fan. It wasn't even Kaepernick's actions as much as the reaction that has me saying, I'm not going to stand with Kaepernick, I'm going to sit with Kaepernick. So first, let me explain, in case you didn't see, here's what Kaepernick said, why he didn't stand for the national anthem before a very important preseason game. He said, I'm not going to stand up to show pride in a flag for a country that oppresses black people and people of color. To me, this is bigger than football, and it would be selfish on my part to look the other way. There are bodies in the street and people getting paid leave and getting away with murder. So now, some people take great offense at those, but there are bodies in the street. A lot of unarmed black men have been shot. Is there a history of racism in this country? You would have to be blind, deaf, and dumb in many different ways to think that there wasn't racism in this country, let alone a very legitimate case to be made that it exists very strongly today. Not as strongly as it did in the past, obviously, but we can go through all those stats. Blacks and whites do marijuana at the same rate. Blacks get arrested at 4 times the rate for the same exact crime. So, and blacks are killed disproportionately by police officers when they are unarmed. So we've done all that. So he has a perfectly good point to make about how that flag and that anthem is not standing up for what it's supposed to stand up for. So I'm going to sit so that I can draw attention to it and maybe help fix it so we could be more proud of our country. Okay, that's a message that seems at least within the realm of debate, doesn't it? No, apparently for the critics, how dare he? It's how to say that you will dissent in a country built on dissent? Outrageous. Okay, so Alex Boone, who used to be a former teammate, now plays for the Vikings, said, you should have some fucking respect for people who serve. Yeah, that seems pretty respectful. All right, so we're going to get to the people who actually served in a second, because Boone did not. And he's not allowed to speak for them. They can speak for themselves. And wait till you hear what they had to say. Now, but I want to go to a really amazing and more important part of this story, because Alex Boone's a knucklehead, you know, football player, doesn't have much of an effect. But the people in the front office of the football organizations have a big effect. Some idiots have been claiming, oh, Colin Kaepernick did this to help his career and get attention. How is this going to help his career? Well, Bleacher Report, Mike Freeman, great job. He went out, reached out to 7 different executives and said, okay, hey, what do you think? Do you like this move? Are you more likely to sign Kaepernick? Are you less likely to sign Kaepernick? And the answer was overwhelming. Oh, hell no. They hated this move by Kaepernick. And they're pretty much saying that we're going to blacklist him from the league. So let me give you the exact quotes. One NFL front office executive said, I don't want him anywhere near my team. He's a traitor. Oh, that's insane. That's insane. Okay. Now, it gets worse. One executive said he hasn't seen this much collective dislike among front office members regarding a player since Ray Carruth. Remember Ray Carruth? He's still in prison for the plot to murder his pregnant girlfriend. This is a league where people have killed others and be treated as huge heroes. I mean, look, I like Ray Lewis as a football player, but he was involved in that fight where people died. People have done drunk driving, killed people, and you know, domestic abuse, and the list goes on and on. They're all totally fine, but a guy does a peaceful protest where he doesn't stand for the national anthem for a legitimate political reason. The traitor. That's it. Oh, you hate him. See, this isn't about Colin Kaepernick. It's about these guys. These guys who react in that way. They're saying to the Kaepernicks of the world, don't show us the ugly side of America. We know that it exists. If we didn't think it existed, we wouldn't have this kind of over-the-top reaction. We know it exists. For God's sake, don't show it to us because it makes us uncomfortable. Okay, now, here's another executive. He says about Kaepernick, he has no respect for our country. Fuck that guy. These guys all seem so respectful. One guy politely sits during the national anthem. The other guys are like, oh, no respect, fuck. Right? Okay. These are executives. Another said that if an owner asked him to sign Kaepernick, he would consider resigning rather than do it. Oh, you would lose your incredibly lucrative, wonderful job because that's how much you hate someone for pointing out that blacks might get treated a little different in this country than white people. That just to have that debate outrages you so much to your core that you think, oh my God, I'd rather lose everything than to have that debate. That tells you something about our country, man. There's a sickness here. Like, people know, they know that there's a problem, they just don't want to address it. They're scared to death of it. And Kaepernick has brought that up, and so I sit with Kaepernick. I didn't agree with his form of protest, but you guys are making me support him even more. Now get a load of how much it's going to hurt him. According to Bleacher Report, each executive said he believes Kaepernick will likely get released by the 49ers and never play in the NFL again. All because he did a political protest, which is the core of what America is. If you love America so much that you want everybody to stand for the national anthem, you would say, oh, that's a political protest at the core of the country, at the core of our rights, at the core of our Constitution. Bless his heart. But you don't love America. You don't even understand America. All you know is, he's them, I'm me, I'm going to protect what I got, and I'm going to fire him and make sure he never works. How dare he question me and my comfort? One other general manager said, in my career, I have never seen a guy so hated by front office guys as Kaepernick. And that's the NFL we're talking about. Okay, now, I'm going to get to the veterans in a second and let them speak for themselves. But I want to go to one civil rights activist who's a legend, Harry Belafonte. He did it at the height of his career. He did civil rights protests. And at the time, there was a fury unleashed on him as well. And now, the Muhammad Ali's and the Harry Belafonte's are celebrated. Like, oh, that was so great that they spoke out. What courage they had. He says, hey, knuckleheads, this guy's got courage too. It might cost them millions of dollars. It might cost them everything, and he's doing it anyway. Belafonte says, I think that when a black voice is raised in protest to oppression, those who are comfortable with our oppression are the first to criticize us for daring to speak out against it. That's a great quote. That's a powerful quote. Those who are comfortable with our oppression are the first to criticize us for daring to speak out against it. That is exactly what's happening here. Belafonte goes on to say, I think that it's a noble thing that he's done. I think that speaking out and making people aware of the fact that you are paying homage to an anthem that also has a constituency that by the millions suffer is a righteous thing to do. So he's saying, remember, that's also our anthem. We're also Americans, and if we're suffering, it is right to point out that suffering so that we can help address it. He says, it takes a lot of courage to stand up in the face of that onslaught, that reactive moment, and not bend to the wind. And one more from Belafonte. He says, what I would love to see is a few hundred other black athletes take that as a symbol. And he's saying, look, you know, all of you guys out there, Kaepernick is actually risking his career. And he knows it. He knows that he was on the bubble anyway with San Francisco, and that this is going to make other people angry and less likely to sign him. And, or even for the people who don't mind what he did, they're just going to think, oh, that's a hassle, that's more trouble, a lot of our fans are going to be upset. He has absolutely risked his career for this. Now, guys like LeBron James and the top athletes in the country, yes, from time to time they do wonderful things. They do speeches at the ESPYs. But they don't risk their career. See, the LeBrons are never going to get cut. And I don't mean to put all this on LeBron. I mentioned LeBron because I thought he should have done more when Tamir Rice was shot in Cleveland. But he has done more than many of the other athletes, to be fair to him. But some of the superstars, you guys aren't going to get cut. You're not going to get blacklisted. You've got a responsibility to sit with Kaepernick. Okay, now let's finally go to the veterans. And these are not all veterans. I'm sure that there are veterans who are also upset at this. Of course there are, right? But I want you to have the full sense of it. You're right now in social media and in other places, you're only hearing the veterans who are angry at Kaepernick. I want you to see the other veterans who are actually proud of him. And yes, they most certainly exist. So here they are on Twitter. Here's a guy who asked, basically, put up the first one, if I became rich and famous today and decided to speak out on the ongoing systemic oppression of black people and constant police brutality in this country, which uniform would you burn? And he has his four different uniforms from when he served. Powerful message, love it. And then here's another gentleman who's, they took a picture of him and it says, my father, a Marine, served his country in Vietnam. He says, we're from far from justice for all, hashtag veterans for Kaepernick, that's what they're using. Here's a lovely mom who's for Kaepernick, says, I'm a disabled veteran and haven't stood for the anthem since I separated. We are not free. God, I love these people standing up, sitting down, all saying, you don't speak for me if you're blasting Kaepernick. I've got more for you. Here's another veteran, and he says, I serve for his right to protest. I don't serve for police brutality. Think about that, how simple a message that is. What did you go and fight for and risk your life for? Was it for freedom and the right to protest? Or was it for the right of cops to be able to do brutality? That's not a hard choice. Police brutality is a bad thing. We should all be against it. We should all fight against it. Doesn't mean all cops do police brutality, but for the ones that do, we should all be united against it. That's not that hard a concept. You didn't go and fight in Iraq and Afghanistan in favor of police brutality. You did it for American rights. Okay, more. Here's another gentleman. He says, hashtag veterans for Kaepernick, because I didn't volunteer to defend a country where police brutality is swept under the rug. Love it. Keep going. Free speech is free speech all the time. And I love that these guys are black veterans, white veterans, males, females. Here's another woman. She writes in, I took an oath and served, so players on a team I don't even like could have freedom of speech. These people at least understand what America is all about. Let's go to the next one. If you haven't served, don't speak on my behalf. Hashtag veterans for Kaepernick. Here's another. I don't agree with all of his points, but I'll fight to the death for his right to say it. Hashtag veterans for Kaepernick. That's literally what veterans do. They fight to the death to make sure we have those rights and people like Kaepernick have those rights. Here's another. Marco writes in, I serve to protect your freedoms, not a song. Hashtag veterans for Kaepernick. Ed Beck writes in, because we're actually not all self-centered racists. Hashtag Black Lives Matter. Hashtag veterans for Kaepernick. Here's a lovely couple. Rebecca Galinas writes in, my husband just returned from 8 months deployment defending Kaepernick's freedom of speech. Hashtag veterans for Kaepernick. And final one, speaking of LeBron, this is LeBron Flocka James. He writes in, people who haven't served trying to tell us how we feel. And he does an emoji. Hashtag veterans for Kaepernick. That's powerful. So now you know there are actually a range of voices, and there are a lot of people, including a lot of our veterans, that think, let's sit with Kaepernick. All right, back on the Young Turks, let me read a couple of tweets for you guys, and then we'll dive into Trump, fortunately or unfortunately. Okay, Fitzhugh Ludlow says, I'm with JR on this one. They did the guy a favor, referring to the cop with the blurred Trump shirt. So, JR, you got your supporters. Then we've got Celeste Holmes that says, please stop using the term alt-right. Call them what they are, racist, extremists. Don't take their term usage. But, Celeste, I actually don't mind their term usage, and I'll tell you why. Because they're never going to call themselves racist. By saying that they're alt-right, they're saying, yeah, we're the racists. Okay? It's the same thing. If they want to use a different term, good, they're outing themselves. You know, I looked back at my David Duke interview that I did just like a couple of months ago, because David Duke's in the news today. I'm going to talk to you about him in a second, his reaction about the immigration story, his speech that Donald Trump just did. And it's amazing. You look through the comments, and half of them are like, Cenk, you don't understand. This is Dr. Duke. He's trying to educate you on how terrible the Jews are, and you won't even listen. An amazing number of comments that say that. That's in youtube.com/TYT interviews. Go check it out. It is, although I don't know that I want you to check it out, because it makes you hurt for humanity to see all those people who are like, of course David Duke is right about the Jews, right? You think it's just Latinos and blacks, these alt-right guys? No, just like with Steve Bannon. They hate everyone who isn't them. They're the Lannisters. Okay. Anyway, Dan Campbell says, hey liberals, Kaepernick has limits on his First Amendment rights. Only the Second Amendment is absolute. That's funny, Dan. And the drunken monk says, same people hating on Kaepernick are the same ones waving the Confederate flag while looking to secede from the Union. That's an awesome point. And Christina says, notice how a lot of these veterans are white. They woke. No, I love that. I love that it was totally mixed, blacks and white veterans supporting Kaepernick. Okay, now let's go on to Trump's insane immigration speech. So there was a lot of questions about whether Donald Trump was going to soften his stance on immigration, on the wall, and deportation force. He went to Mexico yesterday, and I said that that was actually a smart, savvy political move on his part. Talked to the president there and came across somewhat sane. I mean, he still sounded like a child, but at least he didn't say anything outrageous there, and he stood there with another foreign leader, and it was a nice moment for him. So he then, afterwards, he's going to go give a big speech in Arizona about immigration. And so people are wondering, okay, here we go. Is this the pivot where he becomes the softer, gentler Donald Trump? And there's good reason for it, because when you look at the numbers, you see why so many of his political advisors have been telling him to soften his image on this front. Mediaite explains, on the question of whether we should deport as many illegal immigrants as possible or provide a path to legalization, a whopping 77% favor the latter, while only 19% favor mass deportation. So think about that. His idea of mass deportation is incredibly unpopular, only 19%. 77% say pathway to legalization. That's what the right wing calls amnesty. That's 77% of the country. That's who he's trying to go against while trying to become president of this country. And it's not just Democrats and independents. They say almost half of Republicans would more likely support Trump if he softens, while 34% of independents would do the same. So even Republicans, half of them saying, by God, make it, be reasonable. You're not going to deport 11 million people out of this country. So which way did Trump go? Well, first let me read you a summary from Huffington Post, then you're going to get to hear himself from Donald Trump. We've got a great video on him. They explained that in response to this perceived threat of immigration, Trump proposed a 10-point plan that would, among other things, build a wall across the United States southern border, create a deportation task force within the Department of Homeland Security, triple the number of immigration and customs enforcement agents, immediately begin deporting 2 million what he called criminal aliens. Trump did not say how he planned to pay for these initiatives. Of course, he never says how he's going to pay for it. So does that sound like he softened anything? No. He went the other way. Now, look, this is part of why we call him Loser Donald. So here's a guy who says sees that 77% of the country is against him, goes, I don't care. Yeah, I'm going to go further in that direction. Genius move, Einstein. Okay, so first of all, he is going to be very clear about the deportation. Watch.
We will begin moving them out day one, as soon as I take office, day one. They don't come in here. They don't come in here. Day one, my first hour in office, those people are gone. We will take them great distances, but we will take them to the country where they came from, okay? And you can call it deported if you want. The press doesn't like that term. You can call it whatever the hell you want. They're gone. They're going out fast. But their days have run out in this country. The crime will stop. They're going to be gone. It will be over. We will issue detainers for illegal immigrants who are arrested for any crime whatsoever, and they will be placed into immediate removal proceedings if we even have to do that.
So the softening on the deportation task force? Oh no. There's a hardening. Sounds gross. Okay. So they're gone. They're gone. Not only are they gone, we're going to carry them great distances. I don't know what the need for that is. Are we bringing them down to Argentina? Why are we creating more expense by carrying them to great, great distances? And he begins to talk about the crime. There's a lot more where that came from. But now we go to the wall. Let's hear him out on this.
Are you ready? Are you ready? We will build a great wall along the southern border. And Mexico will pay for the wall. 100%. They don't know it yet, but they're going to pay for the wall. And they're great people and great leaders, but they're going to pay for the wall. On day one, we will begin working on an impenetrable, physical, tall, powerful, beautiful southern border wall. We will use the best technology, including above and below ground sensors, that's the tunnels. Remember that, above and below. Above and below ground sensors.
Oh, okay, I didn't know they're going to be above and below. JR was saying here, like, he's our producer who put all this together. He was saying, like, it looks like WWE. He's like, are you guys ready? Right? Oh, yeah, right? And he's like, you know who's going to pay for it? Mexico's going to pay for it.
You got to please believe me.
Please believe me. He says the same thing. And that's interesting, though, because Donald Trump, just hours earlier, was in Mexico. He had a joint press conference with the president there. He could have said it right then and there. They asked him about it, the reporters did. And he said, oh, we didn't talk about it. That wasn't mentioned at all. Later, President Peña said, no, we did talk about it, and I told him we were definitely not going to pay for it. Well, hey, tough guy, you're in front of your own WWE crowd. When you were with the president of Mexico, why didn't you say, yeah, you're going to pay for it. I'm going to make you pay for it. Why didn't you say that? Well, apparently you're not as tough in person as you'd like to pretend you are in your cocoon of right-wing crazies. It's going to be a powerful, beautiful wall. You can't go above it or under it. Okay, now we go to a discussion of these people.
We have no idea who these people are, where they come from. But the police and law enforcement, they know who these people are. They live with these people. They get mocked by these people. They can't do anything about these people. They know who these people are. Those people are gone.
Nails on a chalkboard, man. you're going to go try to get Latino voters after, we know who these people are. The cops know who these people are. They're going to go get them. Wait a minute. If the cops know a crime's been committed, are they not doing their job in arresting them? Everybody wants to arrest someone who has committed a criminal act. 100% of Americans are in favor of that. Are you saying that the cops are derelict of duty and not doing their job? Or are you saying, no, they're not really criminals, they didn't do anything wrong, but they're these people, and the cops know who these people are. And when I get into office on day one, we're going to do something about these people. If you thought his approval ratings among Latinos couldn't get lower, I think you're about to be proven wrong. They're going to go lower. So now, finally, all that was not enough. We have to talk about how they're criminals and aliens. Go ahead, Mr. Trump.
Zero tolerance for criminal aliens. Zero. Zero. There are at least 2 million, 2 million, think of it, criminal aliens now inside of our country. 2 million people, criminal aliens. And there are vast numbers of additional criminal, illegal immigrants who have fled. Non-enforcement policies that allow thousands of criminal aliens to freely roam our streets, walk around, do whatever they want to do, crime all over the place. 300,000 criminal aliens to return back into United States communities to remove criminal aliens immediately. That criminal aliens convicted of illegal reentry to ensure that criminal immigrants and terrorists are swiftly, really swiftly, focused on identifying and quickly removing the most dangerous criminal illegal immigrants in America, and our local police will be so happy that they don't have to be abused by these thugs anymore. Large numbers of violent criminals, they won't take them back. So we say, okay, we'll keep them. The release of thousands and thousands of dangerous criminal aliens who should have been sent home to their countries. Instead, we have them all over the place. Probably a couple in this room, as a matter of fact. But I hope not.
Man, that is, don't say you weren't warned. I'm not talking about me warning you. I'm talking about him. He just said it. So if he gets elected, don't turn around and tell me, well, we didn't know what he was going to do. We didn't think he was serious. He made his intentions very, very clear there. We did not repeat any of the times he said criminal aliens. Those are all individual times that he said criminal aliens, criminal aliens, criminal aliens. They're all among us. They might even be in this room. Why would a criminal undocumented immigrant be at a Trump rally? Now, you know what he means. You also know what he means when he says thugs. We know what that references when he says these people. You think he's just talking about undocumented immigrants who committed crimes? Fact checkers looked into it. It's obvious, but they bothered to look into it. Has the Obama administration really taken undocumented immigrants who are proven criminals and released them into the streets, and that crime is all over the place because of it? Of course not. Of course not. He just made that up. He makes everything up. Let me look. You can dissect almost every line of his speech and show the nonsense that's in it. I'll just give you a couple of examples here from PolitiFact. So they looked into the speech. Trump says in the speech, "The truth is, the central issue is not the needs of 11 million immigrants or however many there may be. And honestly, we've been hearing that number for years. It's always 11 million. Our government has no idea. It could be 3 million. It could be 30 million. They have no idea what the number is." You want to know how Donald Trump, when he's going to lie? When he says honestly. Okay, so PolitiFact looks into it and they say, no, that's not true. The Department of Homeland Security says the number of illegal immigrants was about 11.4 million as of January 2012. That's a very specific number, and they do measure it. Other independent groups that research illegal immigration put the number between 11 and 12 million people. So everyone agrees that has actually studied it. Has Trump studied it? Of course not. Here's Mark Rosenblum of the Migration Policy Institute. It's a think tank that doesn't take positions on immigration legislation. He said that the 30 million number is, quote, a totally absurd number. That's because it comes from the absurd mind of Donald Trump. 3 million, 30 million, I don't know. Ann Coulter later tweeted it might be 60 million. As long as we're making up numbers, what difference does it make? Yeah, maybe the entire country is illegal aliens or criminals. Insanity. Okay, another quote from Trump. He says, President Obama and Hillary Clinton have engaged in gross dereliction of duty by surrendering the safety of the American people to open borders. And you know it's better than you know better than anybody right here in Arizona. You know it. Okay. PolitiFact says, also untrue, there is another inaccurate claim repeated by Trump and his surrogates. Under President Barack Obama, deportations of undocumented immigrants have reached record highs. Even that population has fallen in, as that population has fallen in recent years. And it was not the role of the Clinton State Department to enforce the nation's immigration policies. So understand the two things there. He's like, oh, it's Obama and Clinton. Clinton was the Secretary of State, doesn't have anything to do with enforcing the borders, nothing to do at all. Now, on Obama, that's a demonstrable fact. How many people did he deport? He broke a record. George W. Bush did not deport anywhere near as many people as Barack Obama. A lot of progressives, including myself, greatly criticize him for that. But in Trump's fantasy world, Obama didn't deport anybody. In fact, he took the criminals that we know are criminals and put them all over the place. You know what that is? It's a lie, because the guy's a liar. It's not that complicated. So finally, I like how PolitiFact bothered to discuss the whether our borders are actually open. You know, they used to be. They explain the history behind it. Open borders existed before 1875, when there were no federal restrictions on immigrating to the country. The United States had immigration restrictions from 1875 to 1924 without a border patrol, which was created in 1924. So yes, we have a border patrol, we've had it since 1924. Yes, we have closed borders and we have since 1875. But nonetheless, Donald Trump says that. By the way, before 1875 we had open borders, because who was coming in before 1875? Largely white people from Europe. Back then, we had no problems with open borders. In fact, let me show you the first undocumented immigrant. Oh yeah, that guy didn't have any papers when he came in either. Okay, so we have our answer. There is no pivot. Donald Trump has, if anything, doubled down on his hateful immigration policies. And by the way, his completely undoable idea of deporting 11 million people in the country. He says he's going to deport 2 million first on day one. Really? On day one you're going to deport 2 million people? Who believes this guy, even if you're a conservative? You know that Rush Limbaugh the other day said, oh come on now, I don't really take him seriously. Let's support him, but don't believe anything he says. Oh well, thank you for the honesty on that. He's playing you for a fool if you're a conservative. He's not going to do any of that. He couldn't do it even if he wanted to. He has nothing but a history of incompetence. So at least as far as intentions, that's it. There's no more waffling, and he can say he's going to soften, and he will, yes, no question, say things that are the complete opposite of this later. But this was the speech. They told everybody, pay attention to this. This is what he actually means. Here's his 10-point plan. No, he believes that these people have to go, and they've got to go right away. And you know who these people are. Okay, now let's go quickly to the two sets of reactions for his speech. So Donald Trump gives a really strident anti-immigrant speech in Arizona, and it turns out some of the Latino members of the conservative organizations and the Republican Party are shocked and chagrined to find out that Donald Trump doesn't like that. I think we've kind of been telling you that all along, but they didn't want to believe. Now they realize, oops. So he had his National Hispanic Advisory Council. One person has already resigned, Jacob Monti, heard the speech and he's like, drop the mic, I'm out. Here's what he said. I was a strong supporter of Donald Trump when I believed he was going to address the immigration problem realistically and compassionately. What I heard today was not realistic and not compassionate. He went on to say, when we met earlier in August, he was going to approach this issue with a realistic plan, a compassionate plan, with a plan that was not disruptive to immigrants that were here, that were not lawbreakers. He didn't deliver any of that. So Jacob Monti's out. Now, I'll get to the rest of the council in a second. But first, I want to share with you the comments of Alfonso Aguilar. He is the Latino Partnership, the president of Latino Partnership for Conservative Principles. And here's what he had to say.
When he became the nominee, I thought it was important to give him a second chance because of who the alternative is, Hillary Clinton. And so I decided to support him. And I thought that we could work with him and the campaign to move him to the center on immigration. And the initial response was very good. And then we heard yesterday, and I was totally disappointed, not surprised, but disappointed and slightly misled, because he gave the impression, and the campaign gave the impression till yesterday morning, that he was going to deal with the undocumented in a compassionate way. And in that speech, he's basically saying, we deport you or we self-deport you. It's even worse than what he initially proposed. So today I'm saying, I'm considering withdrawing my support. I'm telling you today, I'm withdrawing my support from Donald Trump. And it's not only me, many like me think the same way.
Drop the mic. Leave the building, okay? So, of course, which Latino person in their right mind would look at that? Even if they're a selfish prick like this. Did I say that out loud? Hillary Clinton, I don't want to vote for her. Lower taxes! I know, dude, I know. You were thinking of supporting this monster anyway, because, God, you really wanted lower taxes. Okay, but now you realize, yes, we were right. He is a monster, and no matter how much you're a diehard Republican who's selfish and doesn't want anybody to be helped by anybody else, you think, well, it turns out he's coming for me. That's right, Alfonso. Hate, it's not just for other people anymore. It's also against you. Okay, so how about the rest of the National Hispanic Advisory Council backing Trump? Well, Leslie Sanchez, who's a GOP analyst, writes in, Hispanic leader who advises Trump camp telling me half of Trump's Hispanic advisory board is ready to resign today. That is 15 of 30 people on the board about to resign because they just woke up and realized, oh, he doesn't just hate other people, he also hates us. That's right. Okay. Now, so who's happy about this speech? You know, as my mom would say, you know. Okay. So when Trump went to go visit the president of Mexico, I explained yesterday that it was a smart move for him because it would soften up his hard edges a little bit. Now, he's not actually trying to get Latino voters, and boy, did he prove that with his immigration speech only hours later. But I explained why he would bother to go to Mexico in the first place. So let's watch that first. But what he's trying to do, and why I think this was a big win for him, is he's trying to tell those white voters that are a little bit on the fence on it with him, don't worry, I'm not racist. Like, because it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard for some of you to go to work the next day and say that you voted for a racist. Mm. So I'm just giving you enough of a fig leaf to say that, no, he's not racist. He went down to Mexico and called them spectacular. So now we're going to go to those white right-wingers that he's trying to appeal to, like Sean Hannity. So was that the strategy, and did you like it? Hey, I'm going to go to deal with the president of Mexico and say, I don't hate Mexican people. I'm standing next to one right here. And then later I'm going to give a speech saying, we've got to get him out. We've got to get him out. Did you like that strategy, Sean? Watch.
As I analyze not the speech, but analyze him with President Nieto earlier today, Laura. It seems that this probably turned out for Donald Trump to be a pivotal moment, and I would argue probably the best day of his campaign. He looked presidential in Mexico. He gave a powerful speech. He laid out a very powerful case. He compared and contrasted his vision on immigration versus Hillary's. He talked about the cost, the impact, criminal justice system, healthcare system, educational system. He talked about how it has impacted families like those angel moms behind him. Very powerful day, I would argue, for him.
So, seems to have hit its intended target. And I'm not the only one saying that. Now, I told you yesterday that all he was trying to do was appeal to white people. Now, here's Corey Lewandowski on CNN, his former campaign manager, not only agreeing, but basically saying, yeah, of course, that was her intent all along. Watch.
Look, I think Donald Trump's message tonight was the message that he started with back on June of 2015, which was America first. Mm-hmm. That's what he believes and what he is playing to. And if you look at the polling data, he's got about an 18-point lead in the demographic of white males who are voting in this election. They have a high propensity of voting, and so he's got about an 18-point lead on Hillary Clinton in that particular demographic. This speech is clearly geared at those individuals right now to make sure that they are there. He's locked them in for the election, and now he's going to have to go and expand. There's no question about it. But this speech right here, America first, is something that has got him to this point, and he's doubled down on it tonight.
Doubling down on white males. Now, who else is going to like this? Well, the extreme right wing. Oh, Ann Coulter, she's back. She did that book launch about how she's always going to support Trump, and then Trump intimated that he might not have a deportation task force, he might go soft on this issue. She was furious. Then she hears this speech, she's like, oh, the Fuhrer is back. I mean, the Fuhrer of angry white people. So she writes in, wow, this doesn't sound like softening. Go Trump! She says, I think I'll watch this speech every night before going to bed so that I will sleep like a baby. Yeah, that's the last thing anybody wants to think about. But anyway, then she quotes him, there will be no amnesty. Our next president. She by the way, these dozens of these quotes, you know, just pleasuring herself to the idea of this hateful speech. And then finally, of the ones that we picked, she says, I hear Churchill had a nice turn of phrase, but Trump's immigration speech is the most magnificent speech ever given. Ann Coulter often talks about how we have to fight against the browning of America. If you made this virulent, admitted racist happy, you give a good sense of where you were going with the speech. Now, she doesn't admit she's a racist. She just says, oh, I don't think we should brown this country. And I don't think we should let brown people in as much. I think that's kind of the definition of racism. Okay, so she's ecstatic. Congratulations, Donald Trump. Now, she's not the only racist who loves this. Richard Spencer is from the National Policy Institute. In fact, he's their president. Let me tell you what they're all about. National Policy Institute is a white nationalist think tank. You know what they said? Trump is back. Jared Taylor is the head of American Renaissance. He's their editor, and that is a white nationalist publication. He says, hell of a speech, almost perfect. And David Duke, of course, the former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, rated the speech as, quote, excellent. Gee, I wonder who Donald Trump was going for. Well, the thing with Trump is at least he doesn't have dog whistles. He doesn't do subtlety. He doesn't do nuance. When he's going to be racist, he just does racist. So even these knuckleheads are like, oh, that's not a dog whistle. That's a human whistle. I hear it. Yes, racism, we're back. Well, now you know who he's going for. If you're not in that group and you think he's on your side, I've got some bad news for you. Okay, now, I know I'm a little past time, but Jesus, we're actually going to do the next story. If you've got the graphics for it, fantastic. If you don't, that's all right. Okay, I'll do it myself. Okay. I want to end on good news. That's why I'm giving this story. Okay. Finally, some good news. We have had some prosecutors in this country who are a little overzealous, to say the least. And one of them is Angela Corey. She's down in Florida. Now, you might remember for a couple of reasons. I'll remind you in a second the most famous case that she was on. But what she's predominantly known for in the area is for being a prosecutor who will try to apply the maximum penalty almost under any circumstance. In fact, Huffington Post explains, Corey personally boasted one of the highest rates of death sentences in the U.S. and has sentenced more people to death than any other prosecutor in Florida. Since 2008, she's cinched 24 death penalty convictions, 19 in Duval County cases. A former public defender, noted Corey prosecuted cases other states' attorneys, quote, wouldn't touch. Now, why am I telling you about her? Because she just had an election. So in the past, if you're an overzealous prosecutor who throws a buck at criminals, you win and you win easily. And we'll find out in a second if that's what happened with her, because she just had her election. But I want to remind you of another famous case she worked on. You remember Marissa Alexander? She's the African-American woman who claimed that she stood her ground when her husband was coming to abuse her. She didn't even fire at him or kill him. She fired into the ceiling to warn him, and he ran away. Now, this was right after all the Stand Your Ground cases in that same state of Florida, including famously George Zimmerman, and all those guys got away with it, but not Marissa Alexander. Corey faced a similar rebuke from her critics for her decision to seek a 20-year sentence against Marissa Alexander, a mother who fired a warning shot at her abusive husband who had threatened to kill her. No, no matter what, she's going to throw the book at you. That's Angela Corey. Okay. Now you're thinking, wait, is that the most famous person that she went after? No. There is one guy she went after and she didn't get. They explained at Huffington Post, but perhaps none of Corey's cases drew as much attention as her prosecution of George Zimmerman, the Florida Neighborhood Watch volunteer accused of shooting 17-year-old Trayvon Martin, an unarmed black teen. Corey was appointed special prosecutor in the Zimmerman case, but failed to get a conviction despite strong evidence Zimmerman was responsible for Martin's death. Now, I don't know how hard she prosecuted Zimmerman. Some say she overcharged him. I do know how effectively she prosecuted him. It wasn't effective at all. He got off. But here's a woman who's known for throwing the book at people and getting her way and convicting all these people. The one guy she just couldn't get was George Zimmerman. Golly gee, what am I going to do? Now, in the past, this has been rewarded. Did it get rewarded this time? Well, she's running against Melissa Nelson and Wes White. Look at these results. Melissa Nelson, 64%. Angela Corey, only 26%. Wes White at 10%. Wow, she got crushed. That was her own citizens going, no thank you. We see what you did, and we are not interested. We're not going to go in that direction. We're not going to be as inhumane as you. We're not going to be as vicious as you. We vote no. So pursuing actual justice, it's a great day in America. Now wait till you find out about Melissa Nelson, the person who crushed her. Now remember, this is a Republican primary, by the way. This is not just Democrats or independents. These are Republicans going, no, no, we don't want that. Okay, Nelson, on the other hand, was part of the team that in 2013 defended 12-year-old Christian Fernandez, pro bono, that means for free, after Corey prosecuted him as an adult and charged him with first-degree murder of his 2-year-old half-brother. Fernandez was accused of shoving the younger boy into a bookshelf, which caused head injuries that he died from days later. It's a 12-year-old kid. He pushes his 2-year-old brother, he hits his head on a shelf and dies. That's a tragedy. She wanted murder, first-degree murder charges. I had to read that again. Really? I thought, even though I had read it, I prepared the story, I had to just triple-check. First-degree murder. Well, the people of Florida are saying, no, we're done with you. That is not how we want to be represented. Again, that's in Florida and a Republican primary. That is great, great news. And she's not the only one. So, earlier this year, Cook County State Attorney Anita Alvarez, who presided over a number of high-profile cases that involved Chicago police shooting civilians like Rekia Boyd and Laquan McDonald, was roundly dismissed. So she didn't go after the cops that shot Laquan McDonald nearly as aggressively as the citizens in her county wanted. She's gone. Okay, if you're not going to represent us, this is a democracy, we're going to remove you from your post. And my favorite, in Cleveland's Cuyahoga County, Prosecutor Tim McGinty, who failed to bring charges against the police officer who killed a 12-year-old Tamir Rice, summarily lost his seat. That Tim McGinty, he did a grand jury proceedings where he presented the defense even though he was the prosecutor. He actively tried to get the cops off. They shot a 12-year-old kid with a toy gun within 2 seconds. They never asked him anything. They never gave him an opportunity. They took his life in a matter of seconds. And he's like, nope, I'm going to, even though I'm the prosecutor and you pay me to be the prosecutor, I'm going to be the defense for these cops instead. Well, guess what? His constituents thought, well, we're not interested in that. We're interested in an honest prosecutor who pursues justice. Tim McGinty, gone. This is democracy. This is how it's supposed to work. And it's wonderful. Go use it. You're upset about national elections, or you're there's candidates you like, candidates you don't like. It doesn't matter, man. Democracy matters at every level. Don't get sidetracked by just national elections. This is your community, and you got to stand up and fight for it. And all these different communities did, and they won. By the way, it's not just in blue states like Illinois. You got Florida here, obviously. You got Ohio. These are, you know, as swing states as you could possibly have. But also, prosecutors have been removed in Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas. This is a wonderful trend in America, and everyone who's participating in it should be celebrated, including those Republicans that voted in that primary down in Florida. You did the right thing. You've got to pursue real justice. Just going over the top and being vicious and being vengeful doesn't mean you've gotten justice. Wonderful day in America today. Go out there, Republican, Democrat, or independent, and be an American. Participate in this process, because it can make all the difference. Young Turks.